It's just crazy that whenever somebody in the women's space and in women's sports and specifically in women's basketball does something that's so impressive, there are still people that are going to be like, oh, she doesn't deserve this because Pistol Pete did it in 3 years without a three-point line. Big news in the world of college basketball. It is official. Caitlin Clark has broken the all-time leading scoring record in NCAA history. She officially passed up Pistol Pete. On senior day at Carver Hawkeye Arena, Clark entered the game against Big Ten regular season champion Ohio State, needing 18 points to pass Maravich, who scored 3,667 points in his three seasons at LSU from 1967 to 1970. And of course, she finished the game with 35 points, 9 assists, and 6 rebounds in their victory against Ohio State. I'm loving the fact that, first of all, it seems like most of the comments and reaction to Caitlin Clark breaking this record are all positive, and you have a lot of celebrities chiming in. LeBron tweeted out, Travis Scott showed up to that game in Iowa. Also, Jake from State Farm was there also. He seems to literally be everywhere. He was there. It seems like it's just such a monumental moment. Maya Moore was there also, who is somebody who Caitlin has looked up to for many, many years. So it seems like overall, it's just such a positive impact. And like I've been talking about on the show, I feel like she is such a great example for what the future could look like for women's basketball, not only alone in college and in youth, but also for the WNBA, because my entire point about why or how I think the WNBA can improve and get more eyeballs and have more interest in it is if we're focusing on these individual players, and Caitlin Clark just continues to break records and just change the game in a way that we saw when Steph Curry came into the NBA. And I feel like she is doing that for the women's game. She doesn't need to dunk to change the game. She doesn't need to be able, you know, to poster somebody to get eyeballs on her, which is what so many people were saying is what the women's game needed. She is shooting these long range shots. She has great handles. She's creating for herself. And she also is elevating her team, because Iowa is successful for the most part because of her. I couldn't help but notice, however, that there were some comments that were saying things like, here's one, for example, I like her, but this achievement is nowhere near as impressive as Pete's dominance. And when you add in the 3-point line, which he didn't have, she doesn't touch his numbers. Whenever there's an accomplishment from any women, and specifically in the basketball space, I don't know what it is about the fans of this sport, but there always seems to be something negative. Like, we can't just give the praise and move on. There has to be some sort of comparison. And for that reason alone, and for there's quite a bit of comments like this on Twitter and on Instagram, just saying like, you know, impressive, but it's nothing like Pistol Pete. I decided to dive into the archives and actually pull up the stats from both of these players and do a little side by side comparison. So back in the 60s and 70s, for men's basketball, there was still like a kind of like JV and varsity squad. So if you were a freshman in the NCAA, your stats didn't count because you weren't officially on the varsity team yet. It's kind of weird, but so he played 19 games in his freshman season, but none of those stats counted toward the final number. Points per game, he averaged 44.2 points per game. His field goal percentage was 43.8%. His free throw percentage, which actually kind of surprised me, was 77.5%, which is not very good. And he averaged 5.1 assists per game. So another thing to note, in college basketball back in the day, there was no three-point line. And so Every shot was just worth 2 points. So it had also been reported that LSU coach Dale Brown charted every shot Maravich scored and concluded that if his shots from three-point range had been counted as 3 points, Maravich's average would have totaled 57 points per game and 12 three-pointers per game. Now, I don't know if we can take all of this as factual because it wasn't clearly documented, and I don't think we can find the shot chart of Pistol Pete from every single game, and 12 three-pointers per game just seems absolutely insane. But he was also putting up like 40 shots per game as well. Also, the last thing to note is that in back in the day, they also didn't have a shot clock. Pistol Pete's, for example, very impressive. 44.2 points per game. Clearly, it seems like the discrepancy between his skill level and his teammates and the people he was competing against were he was up here and everybody else was down here. So Caitlin Clark. Total games played 129 as compared to Pete's 83. Points per game, she's averaging 28.3 points per game, which is also very, very, very impressive. Field goal percentage, 46.6%, which is a solid 3% more than Pistol Pete's field goal percentage. And mind you, I would guarantee that she is shooting from a lot longer range than Pistol Pete ever did. Her free throw percentage, very impressive, 85.6%, and she averages 8.1 assists per game. She's almost averaging, you guys, a double-double per game, which is 3 assists more than Pistol Pete is averaging. So taking all of this into consideration, yes, Pete racked up all these points in 3 seasons. However, the competition level that he was facing in that time compared to what Caitlin Clark is facing in this time. And also we also are not taking into consideration how different just the landscape of college basketball was and how LSU wasn't playing the powerhouse teams. They weren't playing everybody around the country as NCAA and college does now. So it's very hard between these two eras. I think we can give props and flowers to both of these two people, but to take anything away from what Caitlin has done, it's just crazy that whenever somebody in the women's space and in women's sports and specifically in women's basketball does something that's so impressive, there are still people that are going to be like, oh, she doesn't deserve this because Pistol Pete did it in 3 years without a three-point line. So overall, my takeaway, even when I put these two stats next to each other, they are still in Caitlin's favor because she has proven to not only be the best scorer in college basketball history, but also someone who helps her team win, is a well-rounded player, and is nearly averaging a triple-double in her stats. When you look at how she's helped her team success, she got to this milestone not by chasing numbers, not by chasing, and I'm not saying that Pete did either, but not chasing the numbers and saying, I need to hit that scoring record. No, she hit this milestone by winning games with her team. And I think with that, it shows the complete well-rounded player that Caitlin Clark is. And I'm very excited to see her future. So as I was looking at this all-time leaderboard, this name kept coming up, Pearl Moore. So Pearl Moore is technically, if you go to all divisions in college basketball, the leading scorer in all of college basketball with 4,061 points that she ended her career in 1979. So this is also a time when there was no three-point line. However, Pearl Moore, the only information I could find about her was on the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame website. So she was a 4-time All-American, and she's the all-time career scoring leader for women's college basketball with 4,061 points. However, she went to a college named Francis Marion, which is a Division II school. Pearl Moore averaged 30.6 points per game over her 4 seasons, 127 games at Francis Marion College during the era that did not have the 3-point field goal. She was named the 1979 South Carolina Amateur Athlete of the Year, and she was a first round draft choice in the WBL and participated in the 1981 WBL All-Star Game. She was inducted into the Francis Marion Hall of Fame, the South Carolina Athletic Hall of Fame, and was part of the inaugural class for the Florence Area Athletic Hall of Fame in 2006. She also played professionally for 1 season in Venezuela. I had never heard of Pearl Moore, and I just thought this was interesting because I was now seeing her name pop up here and there, but also super impressive, 30.6 points per game in a Division II school, but still going to give Caitlin Clark the crown. She has 3,685 career points and counting, and it will be very interesting to see how she ends up. We talked about it a couple weeks ago with the NBA All-Star game. Obviously, team scoring nearly 400 points total in that game. But the NBA is now officially reviewing if the game has tilted too far in the favor of offense. So in January of 2024, four players scored 60 plus points in a span of 4 days, a feat only done by 36 players in NBA history. If you guys remember, Luka had 73 points in a game, Joel Embiid had 70, Karl Anthony Towns had 62, and Devin Booker also had 62, and that was in less than a week that that happened. So that started raising people's eyebrows of like, where is the defense? How is it so easy for these guys to put up numbers like this? So the team average points per game in 2013 and 14 was 101 points per game, but the team average in 2023 to 2024 is 115 points per average. So it's 15 more points in the last 10 years. The NBA is officially reviewing whether the game has tilted too far in the favor of offense. So thinking of this, I wanted to look at some of the rules that have been changed and how the NBA has changed over the years, because this is something that I have brought up multiple times, and I feel like I'm noticing it a lot in this season of basketball. It does seem like the defensive end of things has gotten very lackadaisical in the NBA, and it's just not cherished as much as used to be. The quote used to be, offense wins games, defense wins championships. But I'm starting to think that offense wins games and championships in today's NBA. And you look at, obviously, players like Steph Curry, who have expanded the game and made three-point shooting and that outside shot become so much more popular. And we're seeing things like, There isn't true fives anymore in the NBA. All big guys have to be able to shoot from the outside. It's such a stretch offense for all of these teams. So we're seeing a lot of that, but we're also seeing that trickle down into the youth game and into the college game. So in a sense, it is very exciting for fans because some fans do want to see players drop 60, 70 points a night. But has it tilted too far to where the integrity of the game is being lost? And it is getting to the point where we saw in the NBA All-Star game, it was so far that it was boring and almost like disrespectful to the original game of basketball. But I wanted to go over with you guys some rules that have changed the game over the years. So in 1954, that was when they first implemented the shot clock. So in 1979, I feel like this was one of the biggest things that people bring up when you talk about hand checking and just like how the game is so skewed for the offensive player. In 1979, they banned hand checking to lessen physicality and allow offensive superstars more freedom to score at higher efficiencies. So the league average points per game in 1978 was 108 points per game. The league average in 1979 was 110 points per game. In 1980 is when we brought in the three-point line. In 1991 is when the NBA implemented a flagrant foul rule. And the point of flagrant fouls was to focus more on maintaining player safety and punishing excess physicality in favor of offensive players. In 1995, we brought the three-point line closer, which I actually did not know that the three-point line was further away than it is now. Very interesting. In 2002, they legalized the zone defense. The original aim was to improve passing and ball movement, but the underlying aim was to slow down the physical dominance of Shaquille O'Neal, which I think is so interesting because in 2002, the game, there was so much more of a post presence in the NBA game than there is now in the NBA game. And a player like Shaq just thrived in that. And name one player that is like Shaq in today's NBA game. There isn't. In 2005, hand checking was strictly forbidden. And then the last rule change that kind of changed the NBA was in 2022 when they removed flopping from the game. Relaxed rules began encouraging flopping for cheap fouls, so fouls will not be called as much heading into the 2022 NBA season, which I actually love removing the flop from the game because it was just looking too much like soccer and nobody wants that. There's another clip I wanted to look at where Luka was talking to JJ Redick, and he said that it's easier to score in the NBA than it is in Europe. So let's check this out.
Scoring is easier in NBA just because of the amount of the different rules, the less space, the time. So that's why I said it.
You think it's harder to score 30 points in a EuroLeague game than it is in an NBA game?
Yeah, 100%.
But there's better players over here.
Oh, way better players. Yeah. I'm just saying because of the rules.
Yeah.
Because the guy can stay. If you have a guy like, let's say, Rudy Gobert, he can stay in the paint on defense 3 seconds, however he wants. Like, just because of that rule, you can have 10 more points easily.
Makes sense.
And obviously, Luka is somebody who is one of the leading scorers in the NBA today, and he's exploiting the rules that we have, the lack of defense. With this topic, though, obviously, Dre, my boyfriend Dre, he was known for his defense in the NBA, and that is a part of his game that he takes a lot of pride in. And even being around Dre and watching NBA games, he can call out what a player is about to do before he even crosses half court. Like, for him, he took so much pride into his defense, and that was just something that helped his career in the NBA and was able to help his team win because of that. I wanted to ask him, he's on his way to a workout right now, but I did want to ask him what he thought about all of this, because he's also one who's like big on keeping the integrity of the NBA and keeping respect for the sport and for playing on both ends of the court. So I'm going to see if he answers and we can ask him what he thinks. Hey, sweet. See, are you in the back roads?
Yeah, I'm on
now. Okay. You're freezing a little bit, but okay. So
you're serious.
What was that?
I said, oh, you're serious.
Yeah. So filming Courtside Club right now, and we're talking about how the NBA is officially reviewing if the game has tilted too far in the favor of offense. So I wanted to know what you thought, because obviously you take a lot of pride in your defense. It's something that you have specialized in. And I know that you are a big proponent of like keeping the integrity of basketball and making sure that we respect the game.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, the game has went too far left, if you ask me. But like I said, I've talked on this pointed subject many times before. One, obviously, with more money involved in the game slash basketball entertainment industry becomes where you have to protect your assets. And that's kind of even been a thing back in my day, but now it's getting to the point where obviously there's more money involved, and obviously the whole realm of, you know, is the game too hard on the guys? We play too many games, that whole topic. So it's like, how do we keep the guys on the floor longevity-wise, and obviously, you know, having the star players on the floor every night where, you know, our revenue kind of stays on our up and up. So it's a fine balance between that and, you know, keeping the game of basketball the game of basketball. So for me, I mean, from your initial question, how do we make it better? Obviously pay the players, play the guys that actually – you guys actually play defense, one. And two, you know, you gotta get better reps in there. But at the same time, you also have to, you know, bring back the competitive spirit of the game. Like, as of right now, it's like, oh, the guys are happy. Obviously, we're making big-time money all around, all across the board, from the lowest guy to the top of the top.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a common knowledge that, oh, we're trying to help each other and protect each other in that sense. To where it's like, to a point of Giannis made early in the season, or was it late last year, of him not working out with guys because he likes to keep that competitive edge. I feel like the game of basketball is too friendly now as well. I mean, it's just becoming more of an AAU culture as opposed to, you know, the physicality of the game, the defense of the game, and even the potential you know, fines that guys face just because of the competitive nature, and it may get pushed too far when guys are in the heat of the moment. The repercussions and keeping themselves from going into that mindset, I guess you could say. So it's a fine line. Otherwise, you know, the game will be a little more physical or be more like hockey to where you can have fights or even just little scuffles.
Yeah.
So that's just that's the...
Well, it's funny, like, it's funny when you look at clips from, like, the 90s, because they actually would fight, and they wouldn't even get kicked out, really.
Yeah, I mean, they get technical, and that's it.
Yeah, there was, like, a clip I saw.
Go ahead.
No, there was a clip I saw where someone was actually choking somebody else. I was like, dang.
This yeah, I mean, you look at the greats, you know, Michael Jordan got in fights, Kobe Bryant got in fights, like, fist fights, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
Have we ever seen LeBron get in a fight? No.
No.
But to a degree, I mean, in this day and age, you're not, you know, going to protect your asset, which is he's the one asset of the league. He's the face of the league for the past 20 years. So, you know, protect him at all costs.
Yeah. So, we're not promoting fighting.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, he does get softer calls.
Yeah.
It follows into that realm. Like, your star players do get the softer calls. They try to protect them. So, every team has their guy. And obviously, that's just kind of the nature of the beast. You know, you kind of want to have an even, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, every night, you know, you want all the teams to kind of have a competitive game. So, and every team has their player that they market, that they push out there. So, kind of protect him and want him to play in all the games. So,
what
keeps the fans come to the game and more money involved. That's kind of...
What did you think of Luka saying that it's easier to score in the NBA than it is in EuroLeague?
He came in a softer realm. And for one, the rules are different, you know. There's no 3 seconds in
defensive. Euro. 3 seconds.
So
wait. It's offense and defensive 3 seconds?
You can sit in the paint. Yeah, it's offensive in the NBA.
Oh. No. And the NBA, obviously, you can't on either end of the court.
EuroLeague is defense, I believe. It's defense. Okay. You can sit in the paint.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can back the paint. So, for him, it's obviously harder. So, he's not going to be striving, you know, it's not as many dunks and highlight plays in NBA mode. So, he had developed his outside shot. And now that he's able to do both, he kind of just opens up his all-around game. So, but at the same time, he also came into a different era where it's softer, it's more catered to the offensive guys. So of course, he's going to say that.
So in general, you also think that defensive players should be paid more and respected a bit more. The guys who do bring great defense. Yes,
the elite ones for sure. I mean, to me, I think going out there and playing defense is definitely a skill. Which a lot of guys don't necessarily cater in, and I wouldn't say cater, but respect and, I guess, gravitate towards nowadays. So, it's a difference between playing defense and going out there and roughing up a player. You know, being able to do it without fouling is definitely a skill.
Yeah.
So, you have to understand the game, you have to understand the player's tendencies, their moves, you have to do your deep dive homework, so... going out there being at a disadvantage and trying to react to a player is already hard enough. So I think guys should be rewarded that actually go out there and study the game and actually put forth the effort to get better and be an elite defensive player just the same way they do offensive players. So, you know, I think it's not enough highlighted on the defensive players. Like even guys saying Dennis Rodman is the greatest defender of all time was kind of a slap in the face of people that actually go out there and study. Dennis Rodman was just a reckless abandon and went out there and just threw his body around and, you know, went out there and stopped guys just based on who he was. So
yeah, it's more intimidation.
It's different. It's different playing defense in today's game, long story short. That's why I hate the whole defensive player award because it's catered to big man. When big man, all they do is sit in the paint and maybe switch 1-5. They switch 1-5, get drug out to the perimeter and they get blown by or... They're a weak link on the defensive end. So the guys actually go out there and play defense. They play 1-5, to a degree, 1-4. do it at a high level, or I think personally are in this day and age where it's five out basically, or what the defensive stoppers that should be recognized upon persons. That's just my take on things. I feel like I'm rambling, but yeah.
No, it's a good take. You would know better than I would. So that's why I wanted to ask you. Do you, last question really quick. Do you still believe that defense wins championships?
100%.
But do you think it does in today's NBA, or do you think it's offense?
Yes, it definitely plays a part in today's NBA as well. All the way down. You know, if you, like I said, if you look at the analytics, I guess when I was in the league, everybody that made it to the championship were either top three or top five in the defense percentage or defensive ranking. So, definitely think. You can't just win. You could ask D'Antoni this. If he thinks winning a championship off pure offense alone is going to get you a championship, the answer is no. And you see it throughout the test of time.
Yeah.
So, got to have a little bit of both. But in order to make it, you got to be able to stop players. So, that's why I don't like the culture that we live in now. It's just constantly outscore guys. Yeah, it's great in terms of making highlight plays, but, you know, it gets boring after a while. Too much of anything gets old, so... I think that's where we're at now. We're trying to revamp it, or just trying to find a way to go back to what we used to do. Which is, like, it's not hard to play old. But I guess get back to older ways of basketball, bring back the integrity of the game. So,
yeah.
That's about it.
Sounds great. Well, thanks for your input, Sweets. I'm going to finish out the shoot now.
Finish out the shoot, and I hope that's some good talking points for you moving forward.
Yes. Great talking points. Thank you.
Yes.
Don't FaceTime and drive, folks. Or if you do, keep your eyes on the road.
Eyes on the road.
All right. Thanks. All right. Have a, talk to you later. Have a good session. Bye.
Thanks. Love you too.
Love you too. Bye. All right, you guys. You heard it there from a defensive specialist who did play in the NBA for nearly 8 seasons, or was part of the NBA for nearly 8 seasons. Thought it was a good talking point. Good talking points. You guys let me know in the comments if you think that the NBA has tilted a little bit too far to catering to the offense and the star players of the league, or you think that it's fine. This is just a new generation of NBA basketball. You guys let me know in the comments. We all know about Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen's infamous divorce that kind of rocked the world of sports and entertainment. I feel like they were couple goals for so many people. Obviously, a beautiful couple, both very successful. And over a year later, their divorce is getting a bit messier in the media. So there's this tweet that went out from Page Six that has over 54 million views now. And it says, Tom Brady has accepted that Gisele Bündchen's romance with jiu-jitsu instructor began years ago. And there's a photo here of Gisele next to her jiu-jitsu trainer, seemingly looking like they are on vacation together. And of course, when I saw this, I went straight to the comments, and a lot of them had kind of the same undertone. Someone said, not even the GOAT Tom Brady is safe from his wife cheating. LMAO, there's a lesson in there. Another comment said, remember boys, even Tom Brady isn't enough to keep her loyal. Act accordingly. Someone said, the media owes Brady an apology. Clowned him for choosing football over a cheater. Somebody said, imagine letting your wife roll around with another dude a few times per week for years. I think meaning like jiu-jitsu. This was so predictable. Only Tom Brady couldn't see it coming. Let me add, he was on training camp for days and weeks at a time. What could possibly go wrong? He also posted something on his Instagram that a lot of people thought he was alluding to some sort of cheating going on. And it was this quote from Muhammad Ali. It's titled, A Man in His Heart. So the personality of a person, the ways of a person, his thoughts, his deeds, his actions are all based around his heart. For what is a man? A man is his heart. A lying, cheating heart means a lying, cheating man. A loving, merciful heart means a loving, merciful man. A living heart means a living man. A dead heart means a dead man. It goes on and on, but what a lot of people were pulling out of this was a lying, cheating heart means a lying, cheating man. I personally think that this means nothing, but I also think that celebrities need to be careful if they're posting any sort of quote, music, anything in your stories. People are going to look into it more than you probably even want to. They've even done that in my Instagram stories. I've had people reach out to me when I like posted a certain song or something, which I've completely stopped doing. I've like posted a song that maybe I liked, but it had some sort of negative meaning to it, or there was something subliminal that people thought was subliminal that wasn't. So I've even gotten myself in that sort of situation, and I'm not even an A-list celebrity, as is Tom Brady. So I would just put that out there, a little side note for any celebrity, like stop posting subliminal quotes and things in your Instagram stories. It's just, it never does anything. It doesn't do what you're wanting it to do. There were rumors coming out about this a lot because after the divorce, Giselle was seen out multiple times with this jujitsu coach, trainer, whoever it is, on vacations and things. And the PR people were very quick to shoot down these rumors and say like, no, that's just her trainer. Celebrities do weird things. I know of a lot of celebrities that bring their personal trainers with them when they go on vacation. So maybe it wasn't so out of the ordinary. But the biggest thing that I take from all of this was the general consensus of people saying, even if you're Tom Brady, you're not safe from being cheated on. But my whole thing is, no matter your status, no matter how rich you are, no matter how beautiful you are, no matter how famous you are, that will never save you from somebody else's poor character. I don't care if you are Beyonce, who's also allegedly been cheated on by Jay-Z, and she's the queen of pop. I don't care if you're Tom Brady. That's not going to save you from somebody else's poor character. Cheating is a choice. Cheating, if you're in a monogamous relationship, is a choice. We also are never going to know the intricacies of what is happening behind the scenes with Tom and Giselle. The speculation started when they originally announced that they were getting divorced was because he allegedly told her that he would be stepping away from football. He retired and then he went back to the game. And the rumor was that she had given up a lot in her career because, if you guys aren't familiar, Giselle is one of the biggest supermodels to ever walk the planet. And she also has a higher net worth than Tom Brady does, if that tells you anything. So her giving up a lot in her career to wait for him and to support him and his career, that was allegedly the reason for the divorce. Will that ever be confirmed or denied? I don't know. There's a Vanity Fair article where she alluded to it a little bit, that maybe that was the reasoning, but then also backtracked. Will we ever know the truth? No. But that was what was alleged the main cause of their divorce in the beginning. So a lot of people were also saying, okay, Tom, you're gone all the time. You're playing football. Why wouldn't she cheat if she wasn't feeling heard or seen? And I think there's really no excuse for any of this. And I don't necessarily love that there's men and women. I don't like the argument that even if you're this person, you could still be cheated on, because I think that's true for anybody across the board. The bottom line is, if your morals don't line up with the person that you go into marriage with or that you're in a relationship with, there's always going to be a chance of somebody getting cheated on or some sort of infidelity. I just wanted to throw out some other names of massive celebrities who have also allegedly been cheated on. Talked about Beyonce. Halle Berry is another one who's one of the most beautiful women on the planet and a very successful woman. Jennifer Lopez is another. Gabrielle Union. We all know Gabrielle Union and Dwayne Wade, and allegedly this was before their marriage. And that was something that they decided to work through together and are still together and seem happily married today. Princess Diana is another one. Justin Timberlake, when he was with Britney Spears, his song Cry Me a River. So these are all massive, massive celebrities with a lot of money, with a lot of success, with a lot of power, who all have allegedly been cheated on. So no, they're not safe. No, you're not safe at home. No, I'm not safe. Like, no one is safe if you're getting into a marriage with somebody who you guys don't share the same values. So what do you guys think? What is the question here? Do you think that there's a justification for Giselle to cheat if Tom is not holding up his end of the bargain and he's staying in football when he said that he wouldn't? Or is cheating across the board wrong? Is there ways to come back from cheating if your significant other cheated on you? Could you guys talk through it? Let me know in the comments. Step into a world of natural wellness and Caribbean flavors with Mabi Artisanal Tea, the embodiment of plant power and hydration. Take a sip, join the movement, and embrace a healthier you. Visit MabiTea.com or your local Sprouts Farmers Market now to experience the taste of the Caribbean and every revitalizing blend. I have been catching a ton of heat lately on my TikTok and on my Instagram of some videos that I posted. So I wanted to go through and read some of your comments. Maybe some of you made some good points, or maybe you guys are just being haters. But the first one that I wanted to address is a TikTok that I made where I talked about my experience interviewing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And I shared with you guys that it just wasn't the greatest interview. It was disappointing to me because I was really looking forward to interviewing Kareem. But let's look at some of these comments. I will say maybe a vindicating comment, which is the first comment with 13,000 likes, said, "I've never met somebody with a good story about Kareem," which is like, isn't a good thing to say, but maybe makes me feel like I'm not the only one that he wasn't so excited to speak to. Somebody said, "So now you chose to badmouth him rather than move on." I definitely was not trying to badmouth him. I was just sharing an experience with you guys in an episode where I talked about some of my worst interviews and worst moments on television ever. And this was one of them. It was a really tough moment for me. Kareem has never been fake for likes. He is who he is and 100% doesn't know who you are or give the interview a second thought or make a video about it. Moving on, I posted my video to my reaction to Michael Porter Jr. saying that in order for the WNBA to improve, we needed to lower the rims. And boy, oh boy, with nearly 5,000 comments on these videos, you guys were pretty upset about it. "I understand and respect your perspective, but I hold a different view. Highlight dunks are much more common in the men's game at every level. Hoops can easily be adjusted, support a change in height for the women's game, and maybe it's only changes at the pro level for women. It's important to recognize that the profitability and entertainment value of women's basketball could be enhanced, and adjusting the rim height might be a practical approach to achieve this." I'm going to stop there because you can't say, "and maybe it only changes at the pro level for women," because as a shooter myself, and ask any women's basketball player who are shooters, which right now we are celebrating shooters in women's basketball when we talk about Steph and Sabrina, we talk about Caitlin Clark. Shooting on a 9-foot rim is different than shooting on a 10-foot rim. You cannot have a girl shoot at a 10-foot rim her entire career and then be like, "We could just change it for the pro game." It doesn't work that way. You're going to get a diminished basketball game, skill level in the game if you do that. So I'm going to stop you right there. I'm going to stand true to my point that I don't think that lowering the rim is something that makes sense just at a practical level because of how often women need to practice and how all of the gyms in America, or most of them, and I think a lot of you guys are really privileged if you think that every hoop in America is adjustable, that's just not true, would need to be changed so the women had access to a 9-foot rim. Somebody said, "Michael Porter Jr. is right. It would be more entertaining," but she's more right. "It would be the best move for the sport. Keep it at 10. People are evolving and high school females can dunk now." I just want to ask you guys this one question because I feel like this lowering the rim discussion comes up so often. And there are so many men specifically, it's only men, who are hell-bent on the fact that the rims need to be changed so that women can dunk. Are you really watching an NBA basketball game on the edge of your seat waiting for that next dunk? Is that why you're really watching college men's basketball and professional men's basketball? Is that the moment you're waiting for? Is the dunk? Just let me know. Firstly, let me know in the comments how much of that mean something to you. Because if I asked a lot of you guys, if I went on the street and asked people their favorite basketball players, not a lot of people are saying basketball players who are just dunking every time they get the ball. This is also not the Shaq era where he was dunking the ball a lot. There are a lot of people who would say Luka. There would be a lot of people who would say Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. There would be a lot of people who would say Steph Curry. There would be a lot of people who would say the Joker. He's even a tall guy who doesn't dunk like that. There would be a lot of people who would say LeBron James. And I will say, yes, LeBron James, his dunking ability is part of his game and a big facet of his game. But any of the other guys I named before, there would be a lot of people who would say Kyrie Irving. Those aren't guys who are dunking the ball all the time. I also wanted to say one more thing. Lowering the rim to 9 feet, and I'm saying this as a woman, is not going to make some crazy dunks for women. It would have to be lower than that. It would have to be lower than that for you guys to get the appeal of the dunks that you want to see happen. And at the same time, the cool thing about a dunk is that you see a feat that is really hard to accomplish. So when you see a shorter guy dunking the ball or doing something acrobatic with his dunk, or let's take it to the dunk contest. We see Mac McClung, who is a 6 foot white kid, dunking and soaring through the air and jumping over Shaq and doing all these things. That's impressive because it's very, very, very difficult to do. And 99.9% of the world cannot do it. We lower the rim to 8 feet, where all of a sudden 6'3" women's basketball players are doing cool dunks. It's like, well, it's not that impressive because now we just lowered the rim so much where they're able to do it. And speaking of that, I actually saw an article recently that there is this whole new league in Connecticut where men are lowering the rim to 8 feet and guys are kind of living out their dream because they were never able to dunk before. And now they're dunking. Here's the headline: want to dunk but can't? These leagues just lower the rim. Lowering the rim by up to a foot and a half can allow recreational basketball players to live out their dunking fantasies. So you know what? After coming full circle on all of this, it's maybe making me think that a lot of you guys that are commenting are just kind of, you know, trying to live out your own dream through other people's, because you also can't dunk. Somebody commented, literally adjustable baskets exist for a reason. Again, I feel like this is a very privileged take, and maybe times have changed. Maybe it's different now, but I played at the park quite a bit growing up. I played with men quite a bit growing up. Caitlin Clark also played on a men's AAU basketball team. Girls playing with guys to get better also means that we'd be playing on a 10-foot rim. There's just this, it's like, it's not a good argument. There's adjustable rims. Yeah, there is. If you live in a certain area where you don't have to go play at your church, where they don't have the money to just make two courts and have an adjustable basket. You want the same money with the same basket height, but you don't have the same experience for the customer that is paying for the game. Something's not matching here. Cheap excuse that we have to finish the conversation because we cannot change the baskets. I also personally think that a lot of people commenting this wouldn't watch women's basketball regardless. And my last point on all of this, maybe we can talk about it again another day because I have so many thoughts, is I'm never going to be that person who is demanding that the women make as much as the men. I've actually, my advice to female basketball players is to try to make as much money as you can in other ways, because there's just so much money in the brand space right now, and there's so much money with NIL. That has been my suggestion to women to make their money there, because right now, no, the WNBA isn't profiting and we can't make as much money there. The women's game may never have the amount of eyeballs that the men do, but it's growing and I think it will get there. And I just don't think that lowering the rim will ever be the end all solution to that. And also, last thing on it, just from a practical standpoint, because I think all of you guys need to take a step out of your ego and just think more practically. Lowering the rim is going to take, you're going to have to take like 10 years to see if it actually works. Are we willing to risk 10 years of an 8.5-foot rim to see if it works for women's basketball? Because you're going to have to see it grow from the youth up. It's probably 10, 15 years to see if it works. It's just dumb. It's a dumb argument. And I'm going to end it there. Last video, I wanted to read some comments on because you guys were really, really frustrated about this one. And it actually made me sad because when I made this video for you guys, I wanted it to more so be of a fun story, like more lighthearted, but maybe I didn't articulate myself properly. But this was the video where I talked about doing a shoot with Chris Mullen. And talked about going into this shoot. I didn't know much about Chris Mullen, and you guys were very upset that I didn't know much about him. One of the first comments was, not knowing Chris Mullen is pretty embarrassing. LOL, homie was on the dream team. Someone said, how the F do you not know about Chris Mullen when your whole effing career revolves around the NBA and basketball? I'm going to tell you guys this. I'm not a basketball encyclopedia. I hope that none of you guys are on my channel or listening to my videos or watching them because you think that I'm going to give you just endless basketball knowledge. It's not me. It's never been me. If you want that, go to JJ Redick's podcast. Go listen to Bill Simmons. That man is actually the basketball encyclopedia man of the world. Like, go elsewhere. Wasn't me. Never has been me. Chris Mullen played in the 90s. I was born in the 90s. I didn't start playing basketball until 2001. And so a lot of my knowledge from previous days is only me seeing certain highlights, reading about people. And one of the comments, though, that was really kind of hurting me to my core, and I'm normally really not that offended by anything that you guys say, was people saying that I didn't do my research or I'm only getting these jobs because of my looks. So I wanted to set the stage for you a little bit and give you a little bit more context about my shoot with Chris Mullen. Firstly, it was not an interview. It wasn't for my podcast. If it were, I would have dove much deeper than I did when I was researching before the shoot. Did I research before the shoot? Yes. Did I know who he was? Did I know what teams he played for? Did I know that he was an all-star? Yes, knew all of those things. The point of this video was to share with you guys how I was not expecting how good of a shooter he would be at 60 years old. Because I have done shoots with multiple NBA players. I've been on courts with multiple NBA players, played in NBA celebrity games with NBA players, and none have been as good as Chris Mullen. None. Not even Steph Curry. That was the point of this. I wanted to share that with you guys. And another thing that I wanted to know is that I'm always going to be honest and real about my experiences with people. And I think that that's something that we lose a lot with media nowadays. A lot of people just try to act like they know everything. I'm never going to be someone who acts like they know everything. I don't. And I especially don't when it comes to sports, when it comes about X's and O's, when it comes to talking about every player from the past. I'm going to comment about the things that I do know and that I have opinions on, but I'll be the first to admit when I don't know that much about somebody. And this was a moment, and this was a video that I meant to make to kind of share what a great basketball player this man is and how impressed I was. So I didn't want you guys to take it and that I was putting him down in any way or I was being disrespectful, because that's never how it was. And the shoot was great. He was fantastic. There were fans there who were also interacting with him. It was more so of like a commercial shoot than it was an interview. I actually didn't interview the man at all. We were doing, the whole thing was us to do shooting games against one another. It was for Caesar Sportsbook. It was more of a commercial kind of betting shoot. So I wanted to clear that up. A lot of you guys clearly have a ton of respect for Chris Mullen, and I'm glad that you guys do. But I also wanted to let you know that I always do my research, and that's one thing I take a lot of pride in. So those kind of comments kind of hurt my soul. Lastly, I love when you guys comment good, bad, ugly, constructive criticism. I learned a lot, actually, from posting that Chris Mullen video, because I realized I do have to give a bit more context. You guys had a lot of things to say. Please feel free to always comment your feedback. I read a lot of them. So let me know in the comments below what you guys think. With that, you guys, I love reading your comments, good, bad, constructive criticism. So please keep them coming.